Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of You Make Me Sick. It's Nurses Week. So nationally, I think it's the first or second week of May is recognized as Nurses Week. And my guest today is a very special guest. It's Suzette Bianchi. Suzette is a registered nurse in a 27-bed medical intensive care unit at Boston Medical Center. She's been a nurse now for over 36 years. Suzette holds a position as permanent charge RN. She's also an instructor in the operation of continuous dialysis, also known as continuous renal replacement therapy. She's here today to talk about her long and interesting career and just how much nursing's kind of changed over the three-plus decades that she's been an RN. And I'm sure we'll talk about many other things. Suzette, thank you very much for joining.
Oh, you're welcome.
So, Suzette, you've been a nurse now for over three decades, but I kind of was wondering, before you kind of got into nursing, when young Suzette, did she always want to be a nurse, or was there something else you wanted to do? Like, how did you kind of come to the decision to do nursing?
There was a couple of things I wanted to do before nursing, and the reason that I'll tell you the reason I chose nursing before I'm going to tell you the other things that I wanted to do. I grew up in a big family. My parents had 14 kids. One was stillborn. So I'm the youngest of those 14 siblings with my twin sister. And so I had a lot of role models. When I think of role models, I think of my siblings. I don't think of that basketball player, Michael Jordan, or, you know, Michelle Obama, although they are awesome role models. But I think of my siblings are my role model. My parents are my role model. So whatever you see me, you see my background and my history. So seven of my eight brothers went to the service, and that's why I travel, because they send those letters from overseas. But one of them was into real estate, and one of my sister wanted to do a daycare. So I thought maybe I could be a teacher. So I realized I didn't want to be a teacher because my nieces and nephew drove me crazy. That was too much. And then I decided I didn't want to do real estate because that involved like just showing people houses. And that's other stuff that goes along with that real estate. And I didn't see that. So one of my sisters was an LPN. And I'm like, oh, okay, let me try that. I tried it. I liked it. And I went back to school and became a registered nurse. Because of one of my sisters, and now since then she has passed on, but she was one of the reasons that I became a nurse, because, you know, she talked about how she enjoyed the nursing and talked about the patients, and the stories was comical. So I wanted that life. I wanted my sister's life, and I admired her for doing that, because at the time when she did that, she was a single mother, like from her first marriage. Yeah, so that's why I became a nurse, because of my sister.
So for people who might be or might not know, like LPNs versus RNs. So LPNs, it's like maybe you can just kind of explain to people who aren't aware, you know, precisely with the LPN role versus like an RN role and what you can and can't do.
Right. So I started nurses in the late 80s. So during the late 80s, at the majority of the hospital you did, they hired licensed practical nursing. And the Department of Health and Hospital was one of the biggest hospitals that hired licensed practical nurses. And those nurses are the nurses that graduated from that hospital school, because they offered that school in the early 80s. And at that time, they worked in the ICUs. They worked everywhere. But one of the roles that they couldn't do was they couldn't do part of an admission assessment. So it has to be a registered nurse that did the admission assessment. Like basically doing assessing the patients, physical assessment of the patient. At the time, the licensed practical nurses, they couldn't hang antibiotics. The nurses, the registered nurses hung the antibiotics. They kind of supported the registered nurses. We gave out, you know, medications, but the registered nurses was the charge nurses and did all the assessment in a hospital setting. A lot of the LPNs now this day, they work in skilled care facilities like the long-term nursing care. They do not no longer work in the hospital settings. And if they do work in the hospital settings, it may be a small clinic or whatnot, but not at the bedside in the hospital setting anymore.
Yeah, I remember when I was in nursing school, we a couple of our semesters, we had to go to, it was like a long-term care facility. They took vents, interestingly enough, but there were LPNs there, and the LPNs that have been there for like 15 years were better than the nurses who had been there for like a year. So LPNs, they're fantastic resources if you have them, but yeah, it's a lot of regulations now don't allow for LPNs in hospitals, or hospitals themselves haven't been hiring them. I was wondering, like, nursing school for you. So you were an LPN first and then went on to nursing school?
Yes. So the reason I did the licensed practice on nursing, because it was short term, and I wasn't sure if I even wanted to be a nurse. So, and my sister's like, she encouraged me to do that first, because I may not like it. Because if I didn't like it, I wasn't invested in it for a long, long time, long term. Now, when I decided to go back to nursing school as a registered nurse, because I really like, you know, the LPN role, but I also wanted to advance my role. So I went to Roxbury Community College. At that time, I think it was only the third year that Roxbury Community College had that program, the associate's degree program, because I guess it was a difficult program because you have to do your prereqs, and it takes a year to do your prereqs, and then you go into the nursing program. So I went back to Roxbury Community for my associate's degree. And I remember starting a class out. There was probably like 50 of us, but only like 12 of us graduated. It was such a difficult program. But yes, I did that in the very early days. And so I have my associate's degree. I did think about going back, you know, a couple of times, but I got so involved in, you know, at the time I was a single mother. That's just trying to navigate becoming a single mother after 10 years of, you know, with my son and my first husband. So that was hard. And I devoted a lot of my time to, you know, raising my son and working at the hospital. And I work in various roles at the hospital. And I think about now, did I make the right choices? Like, when I navigate and think about my life, and I'm so happy because all the choices that I made in my life has brought me to this moment of my life and the path that I have taken. I think 2 years ago, I signed up for the master's program. And then 2 years ago, a lot of my older siblings was having health issues. And I thought about that. And I'm like, well, if I go to the master's program, will it change my course this moment in my life? And I think that's what people forget when they, you know, when we make these big life decisions. Is it going to benefit your life? Is it going to change my life? No, because I'm still going to do the exact same thing that I'm doing now. Because I have a big family and I have a couple of nieces as nurses, I do encourage them to get advanced degrees, which a lot of them do have advanced degrees, but because they are younger and that's their path and that's their life. So that's their life choice, and I encourage them because I am their role model. But if I have a chance to, you know, go back 2 years ago and I made the decision not to do it because it may put me in this high stress situation where I need to go see my brother. He's in the ICU, because that happened over the last 2 years. I've been going back and forth with my older siblings. Now, I don't want to miss that time in their life because I'm so caught up in a program that's not going to change anything right now.
Yeah, which makes sense. I think it's to a good point. Like, the older you get, the more, you know, involved your life becomes, the less time you really have to prioritize something like school, especially if you don't need it. Why bother? So completely understand that. So you had started your career kind of in the late 80s. What was your first nursing job in intensive care, or did you start somewhere else?
My first nursing job was on the old Boston City Hospital, which is now Boston Medical Center. It was on a medical unit with a neuro. So it was medical and neuro. So, like, I remember Liz Clings when she was an intern.
So that's pretty crazy. Yeah. So one of the attending pulmonologists at Boston Medical Center, Elizabeth Klings, who's been there for probably as long as Suzette now.
Yes.
So Suzette, so when you did start, it was kind of like the late 80s. And something that a lot of people who were alive back then remember is kind of the AIDS epidemic that was happening. Mm-hmm. And one of the interesting things is that before, AIDS really came along, working in healthcare, it wasn't required that you wore gloves when handling patients, even if they, you're going to be touching bodily fluids. Do you kind of remember, first of all, like the AIDS pandemic or AIDS epidemic when it first started? And then just wearing gloves, was that something that you first had to start wearing gloves, it seemed odd? And now that you think about it today, like we glove up in every room we go into now, pretty much. Are you able to just kind of tell me like what kind of a change was that when that was first introduced? Because it's something we don't really think about these days, like wearing gloves, when you're taking care of people.
Right. So like when I started, and you remember, I'm 59 now. So I was literally 22 when I first started. So the majority of my patients back then was HIV. Like you can go into a room, especially on the medical floor, because we did do surgical also. When they closed our unit, we had to move to down in Fort South with our surgical gunshot wounds and whatnot. Missed up with, medical patients with HIV. But when I started, the population, you may have 5 patients. 4 out of those 5 patients will be HIV and have an opportunity, infection. They may have PCP pneumonia. I mean, many of the diseases that what medication that they're going to use for that patient. And as far as wearing gloves, no, we didn't really wear gloves. We only wore gloves if we are doing bodily fluids, like putting the IV in, like changing the IV dressing. No, I didn't wear gloves. Even to this day, a lot of you guys, a lot of my colleagues will say, Suzette, where's your gloves? I'm like, oh, okay. But if I'm changing bodily fluids, If I am changing bodily fluids, I put gloves on. But I still, to this day, it depends on what I'm doing.
So you worked, when you first started out, was it an ICU that you started out in? Or was it just like a basic medical surgical floor?
It was a basic medical surgical floor.
At what point did you graduate to kind of an ICU? Or what point did you make the decision to move to an ICU?
Medical neuro, and then when they closed that unit, we moved to a Dowling floor, which was all the South Boston surgical nurses, right? There wasn't a lot of diversity back then at all. Mayor Flynn was the mayor of Boston. I've come to this unit with a lot of South Boston nurses and whatnot. They had their different perception of me. Because that wasn't that many of me. I remember the first time I saw Marva, I was jumping up for joy. I'm like, oh, another nurse, another black nurse. It was different. So we moved to that surgical floor, and then after that, we merged and became Boston Medical Center, right? We moved to the new unit, although the ICU still had the double rooms. We moved to a new unit. And then I was still on the medical floor. So we moved to Sissy's, which was a regular medical floor. So at the time we had nurses. So remember, I worked at the time when there was head nurses. There was no nurse manager. It was just a head nurse and directors. There was no in between, right? So I had a head nurse, and then there was the higher us was different directors. And then you had the VP. There was only like kind of 3 levels. But the thing back then, everyone knew each other. Like you saw the presence of these different directors. You see them. Everyone was on the first name basis. And we just had nursing supervisors on the off shifts. So on CIS East, we was introduced to a nurse manager. And that nurse manager kind of changed my perspective on leadership. She saw something in me. She said, oh, Suzette, you're a leader. I want you to become a nurse manager in this unit. in the interim because she got promoted to a nurse director. And this was a regular medical unit. But before she asked me to do this, she went around and asked everyone in the staff their take on who should be that nurse manager while she was doing her nurse director, because that's what she wanted to do. She had got her master's. And a lot of my colleagues had picked me. And so she asked me to do it. Gregory was 10 years old at the time. I said, okay. And I was going through, you know, outside stuff. I was going through my divorce at the time that no one knew about. So I was going through a lot at the time, but I went ahead because she saw that in me. She saw a leader in me. So I decided to do it. I did it for like 11 months. There was some good signs and bad signs, some pros and cons. It does take away a lot of your life. And at that time, Gregory was 10. And I thought towards the end, it was beneficial for me to focus on being that mother and being the bedside nurse, because I really love the bedside nursing. But although I did enjoy doing that, being that nurse manager for that short period, but I don't like a lot of the roles of management, you know, because you was on call 24/7. You was on call. I felt like I did not have a life. So that wasn't for me.
And that's something I think people don't understand is, like, with nurse managers, like the hours that they have to put in, it's not like when you're a bedside nurse, you can do your 3 shifts a week and that's it. You go home and don't have to worry about anything else. As a nursing manager, you could work, you know, upwards of 60, 70 hours a week, depending on what you have to do. And then there's all the headaches of just dealing with people in upper management kind of yelling down at you, and then your nursing staff yelling at you upwards. So you're kind of caught in the middle. So I had no idea you'd been a nursing manager, though. So. But I'm glad you're. Would you ever do it again?
No.
No.
Absolutely not. Because you are on call 24/7. It doesn't stop, and you have to really have a good stable life at home to do that, and you have to be okay with that. I mean, you know, hats off to the nurse managers. You really have to be in depth to that type of career. Because everything goes you.
So you've been a nurse now, you know, like I said, for 36 years, almost, you know, going on 4 decades now. How much has changed with regard just to the interventions that nurses are able to perform now compared to what you were able to do maybe 30 years ago? Are you able to do more or less? And I guess, like, just as an example, you said you're able to put in IVs, you know, certain medications you administer. Has anything changed with regard to what you're able to do now compared to what you, you know, were able to do 30 years ago, just as far as from a patient care standpoint?
I think you kind of still able, like I haven't been out on the floors in a long time because I've been in the unit for the last 21 years. I know when I was on the floors, you still, I felt empowered, but maybe it could be me. It could be my personality. I felt very empowered. I think because of the facility too, because although it's a teaching facility, I feel listening from stories from other places, I think this hospital do encourage and empower you, you know, to speak up and teaches you to go through the chains. Just don't stop at one chain. Even if you're not the charge nurse, go to that charge nurse, go to that supervisor, but do not stop at that change. Because once they enforce policies, once you deviate from that policy, then you are going to be the nurse at fault because you didn't go up that chain. And that's always been the perception at that hospital. That never changed. But I will say now that it's more of a management type of hospital from the you know, from the head nurse, they enforce the policies much more than they did back in the day. I think because one of the things, everything is evidence-based. Back then, everything wasn't evidence-based. Back then, it was, because they told us to, because this person said that, but it wasn't evidence-based. Even though you can argue, you know, that's completely incorrect. But, well, this is what we always did.
And I think that's one of the things that I like about nursing more now than from what I hear from people who've been in it a long time is when we're told, you know, we're changing the policy to do this or that. It's not because, you know, two or three people got together and said, this is what we should do. It's because you now have evidence from studies and there's data to support it. So, right. Which is pretty crazy that, yeah, I love that you brought that up, because that's something, a point that I was kind of going to ask about that. The other question I have is, you mentioned it's a Boston Medical Center is a teaching facility. So we have a lot of physicians kind of come in and out. In the 30 plus years that you've been there, do you feel that in physicians, you know, the residents that we get are usually pretty receptive with nursing requests and listening to nurses? Has it always been that way? Do you feel that physicians are more or less receptive to nurses when we have input now compared to, say, 25 years ago?
I think they still are more receptive. And the reason being, they may not be as more receptive, because I just got off the phone earlier with my niece. She works in a MICU, ICU. She's an advanced degree nurse. And I told her she needs to work in a, you know, one of these type of settings just for experience, especially if you're an advanced degree nurse. You need that experience in that critical care thinking. And she's at Emory. And I think that our doctors, from what I hear from her, our doctors are much more receptive. And because it's a teaching hospital, we have these doctors that are on my age or even older that hasn't left. And so they still practice. You know, they want our input. They always go to the nurses and ask them their input. That has not changed. And that's one of the greatest things about being in ICU. You are involved in the decision making. And they do want your input, because you are at the bedside. And they see how, you know, when there's any critical changes with your patients. And that's very important.
Yeah, the fact that I think having the attending physicians who have been there, you know, for, you know, maybe as long, maybe not as long as you, but longer than most of the staff, I think they have an understanding that's how much the nurses can actually, you know, we spend 12 hours a day with these patients where the physicians mm-hmm. may see them for 5 minutes a day. So
right.
I think that's another good point, just with regard to physicians, especially at a teaching hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of want to talk about just kind of the evolution of nursing as well over the last like 30 years, and how technology's kind of played a huge role, and how much maybe that's changed just from your perspective. Just so many aspects of how RNs kind of provide care, between documentation to the devices that we use. I was wondering, just from your point of view, like, what are some of the major changes that you can think of with regard to technology, and has it made your job easier, or has it just been more difficult?
Yeah. No, it's much easier. Especially, I remember we had the old bub session EKGs that we had to put on during the cold, and it was a bub session. And I would have to say, you know, when we had colds back then, it wasn't professional at all. You know, people yelling at each other. I remember being in the cold in this 4-bedroom, and they just free Mandela, and we was, not we, but, you know, people was watching the TV, and we was running the cold. And they freed Mandela from prison. So, and we used the old EKG with the bub session. So yes, we have advanced in so many ways, and I think even with using the glucomana, the finger stick machine, we didn't have the finger stick machine back then. You have to do a finger stick, and you have to look at the bottle and with the color change. And as nurses, we couldn't do that. The doctors had to do it.
That's insane. Yeah. Like glucometers, it's something we kind of take for granted today, but yeah, I used to have to use it was like a paper strip, right? And then it would change color depending. Yeah. And that's how you would tell the sugar content, which is absolutely crazy. Charting
I completely forgot about that too. I'm like, wow. Time has changed.
So when I first started as a nursing assistant in 2003, the unit that I worked on did not have electronic charting. It was all paper charting. As part of my job, like I was a nursing assistant, and I also worked as a unit coordinator, so I would have to prepare like the next shifts, their cardex and then their charts and all these other things, and hand them out to the nurses before the shifts. New nurses today have no idea what it was like with paper charting. Mm-hmm. So maybe you could talk a little bit just as far as paper charting and what it was, because some people don't even understand how much documentation nurses have to do. Mm-hmm. I feel like I spend, you know, a good percentage of my shift just making sure my documentation's up to date.
Yes. Me too, with the documentation. So Back then, it was, yes, it was a paper chart. And you know, the orders, you know, the doctors was, you know, they've handwritten the orders. And you better hope that you had someone with decent handwriting. and we have to transcribe those orders onto the med sheet. And onto another flow sheet, you know, and when you transcribe it, so you hopefully you pay attention and make sure you are transcribing the correct medical order. It was a lot of paper documentation. I think one of the things with the paper documentation versus the electronic one, at least you have your care plan in real time. Was we even following the care plan with all that paper documentation? There was so much. So I think that's why you see a lot of nurses, especially the older nurses, seasoned nurses, they listen more than they write. Because we had so much paper documentation that you're not going to go run back and look at the paper documentation, especially if you are on the floor and you have six patients. So you are going to be very scared at listening to everything someone is telling you, especially in regards to the patient. One of the things that we did too was, like, when the attendant came, it could be the new attendant, they come and ask you, especially if you was in charge, they ask you basically like for a little report on the patient, what's going on with the patient. So that's when your listening skills go hand in hand with what's going on. Like, even though it's not your patient, but you're in charge, but you're not writing everything down, but you know what that patient came in with. So you're able to regurgitate what's going on with that patient.
Yeah, especially some of these units. I don't know when you were working as a nursing manager, how many beds you had there, but like even our ICU has 27 beds. So to be a charge nurse, when you have 27 beds, it's just, that's a lot going on. So, excuse me. Something else I kind of want to ask you about is just as far as like resources too. So back when, even when I was in nursing school, we really didn't have the online resources they have now. So if you need to look up, you know, how to perform a procedure or an intervention or medications, it was all textbooks that you had. How much easier is it now if you have a question with regard to a medication or medication interactions or how to do something like if you need to do a bladder pressure on a patient and you haven't done one in like 2 or 3 years? Just how much easier do you find it now compared to like 20, 30 years ago?
Oh, so much easier. Because you have a specific book that you can use. You know what? Google make everything easy. You could Google everything too. But make sure what you Google is in your practice. But yes. it's so much easier. And I think now we have a lot more resources because you have to remember, back then we didn't have PharmDs. PharmDs is very new. It's newer. And now we have more. Back then we only had maybe two PharmDs, and that was it. But now we have so many resources with the PharmD. And that's why I say in the huddle, use your PharmD, use your resources. Because before, we didn't have all of those resources. Now it's being an ICU nurse is easier because you have so many resources. And when I say to the newer nurses that come into the unit, that come for the med surge unit, they have to remember they are the resource nurses now. They use the resource nurses out on the floors, but now this is the last stop. So you are the resource nurses.
Right. Yeah. That's kind of one of the things with the ICU is there's not really any place you can go above that. So you kind of have to be fairly self-reliant when it comes to, you know, just judging patient conditions, questions, medications, anything like that. Mm-hmm. So having been an ICU nurse for as long as you have, you kind of know it's this type of job. There's a big toll that it takes physically, mentally, and emotionally. And a lot of times that can lead to burnout. Have you ever felt burnt out as a nurse or kind of considered maybe leaving the ICU or leaving nursing altogether? And if not, you know, kind of what's your secret that helps keep you in critical care without getting burnt out?
When I was working on that floor that I was a nurse manager on, then I went back to the floor, to the bedside, I was becoming burnt out. And I think one of the reasons it was so many patients and my learning, I didn't have a lot of stuff left to learn. So I thought it was time for me to move on. And also the environment I felt was toxic. And I'm not a toxic person. I'm a happy-go-lucky person, per se, until you step on my toes. But other than that, I'm a happy-go-lucky person. Like anybody else would be. I think in life in general, you can have a job, it could be the best job, but if you don't have a good home environment, that best job is not going to be the best job. I think I pride myself on and having like my best life outside of work. Work is not my life. And if I'm working on a unit and I'm not happy on that unit anymore and the unit become toxic, and even with the patients, because it affects your whole aura. So, and especially when you feel you have nothing else to learn, you move on. So we opened up the step down unit because the step down unit was closed. There was only like 5 of us. And I was on the step down unit for a couple of years and they were sending us these heavy patients. I'm like, wait a minute, if I'm taking these heavy patients, it's time for me to move to the ICU. But the ICU nurse manager kept trying to recruit me, but I wasn't ready. I said, let me do my step down and then I will move on. And that's when I move on. I felt that I have done enough floor step down, and I felt that my skills was very well tuned for the ICU. And so when I came into the ICU, I was ready for it. I love critical care thinking. I already knew half of the doctors anyway. So it worked out very well. So, you know, and I love teaching what I have learned, and I love precepting. Although I'm charged now and I haven't precepted in years, that was one of the things I took pleasure in and enjoyed doing is precepting. And the reason that I haven't became toxic to answer that question is because I still, like last year, I kind of wanted to move on to the PACU. I have to find my happy medium and what works with me, for me and the colleagues as being charged. Sometimes you have to look at yourself and say, well, what can I do better to make this job better for me? Or how can I approach this circumstance? And not every fight is going to be my fight. There's other managers there, right? So you kind of have to rethink your job and rethink what you're doing and what's going to be beneficial for you in your home life. So, like my husband, I talk all the time. If something's not making me happy, yes, I'm going to move to the PACU. But right now, I'm in a happy place. My home life is awesome. That has never changed. But you do have to find what's good for you. If your job is not working out, especially in nursing, there's so many other opportunities. You don't stay and make it toxic for somebody else because you're not happy. And try to find ways to change. I mean, like we have a union. Like I'll call them in a minute if I think something isn't correct or right or whatnot. You know, that's a lot of resources to reach out to. But I'm not one of those people that's just going to accept, just work and accept things. I like to make things better, you know? So I think that's one of the reasons that I stay where I'm at because I'm happy. I'm happy with it. Like tomorrow I'm working and I'm looking forward to going to work tomorrow. No, the minute I don't look forward to going to work, I'm moving to another position.
Probably pretty good advice for anybody, right? If you're really not happy at your job, if you can find work somewhere else, go do something else, you know? With COVID, so COVID-19 happened. COVID was brutal. As you know, it lasted, you know, a few years. Anyway, we saw patients just critically ill come in. And a lot of the nurses that we had when COVID first started kind of left after that. At any point in time during the pandemic, did you feel overwhelmed or burnt out or that our resources just weren't enough?
I think like coming towards the end of it, especially when it wasn't about saving, not necessarily about saving the patient, when you know that patient's going to die. And when you know, you want to be an advocate to make sure they get that phone call to their loved ones to say bye, because you know at that moment in time, that's the last time they're going to say bye. There was a lot of tears shed in those rooms, you know, with the mask on that people didn't see, you know, because you want to be that strong person. You want to be that strong charge nurse, but you know, sometimes, you know, you can't be that person for everybody, but you can try to fight for your patient. And I think with all that we did, everyone fought for their patient. And I think at the end, some of my colleagues, and I love them, and I miss them so much, it was too much. It was a battle that was lost. Like, I can't do this anymore. You know, you see a lot of deaths, and you try not to think about it, because a lot of people did die. And I think that's why I am at this place now. And my perspective is, you know, I'm retiring in 6 years. Why go back for an advanced degree? Is that going to benefit my household? Is it going to benefit my husband? Is it going to benefit my son? Who is it going to benefit? It's not going to benefit me. As long as I keep my skill set and do my CEUs and make sure that I'm up to date with all of my skills and my knowledge, I'm just going to be the best nurse that I can be moving forward. And I'm going to be the best, you know, colleague, role model for my family and for my work life. And that's all you can be. What I took away from COVID is life is short. So every day that I wake up, I want to live it to the fullest. And if I find disagreement, I'm going to step back and take a breath and say, I'm alive, right?
That's extremely good advice. And I agree with you 100%. Be thankful for the day that you have, right? So another question regarding the ICU, like the ICU, it's a difficult place to work. There are other units like the ED and the operating room, also really difficult. In the, you know, the decades that you've been working as a nurse, have you seen any change between newer nurses who come in now compared to newer nurses who maybe came in 10, 15, 20 years ago, and just the attitudes that they have towards that? Do you think they underestimate how difficult it is to work in an ICU when they first get there?
Yeah. Yeah. When I came into the ICU, I came with a lot of experience. I cannot imagine walking into an ICU as a new grad or just a newer nurse with 1 year experience. Honestly, I honestly could not have done that. There's no way, nor my skill set and what I'm a visual learner, and you know, I'm such a visual learner. I cannot have come into that ICU that young in my career with less experience, because that's stuff that you overstep, that, you know, that someone with that season experience would see. Even 3 years of experience on the floor, 2 years on experience, but 1 year on the floor, to me, I would be terrified. I see a lot of anxiety. And I'm going to be honest, nothing against, you know, I can understand people having anxiety, but when I started, people, there was no boundaries. They kind of said what they said. There was no, I don't like how she talked to me. I mean, yes, there was a lot of bullying and whatnot back then, but that wasn't this line that, oh, be so nice to this person. I don't know. It's very different. It's very different. It's very emotional. Very fluid. It's like you step back and you have to, every sentence that you're going to say, you're going to think about every word you say. Back then you talk, and as long as you're appropriate, you know, why not? But now the environment now is so different. It's so different. Like even with my son, between my son and my stepdaughter's a lot younger. It's just raising her, you can see the difference from the new generation. There's a lot of anxiety, that very anxious, very emotional, a lot of hurt feelings, even with the simplest things. It's so different, so different.
Yeah, and do you think that that's something in, you know, nursing, especially in the ICU, is very serious. You're dealing with life and death. And there are certain issues that you shouldn't have to tiptoe around. If somebody's doing something wrong, you shouldn't have to worry about hurting their feelings. Do you think that's something now that you feel like you have to be more worried about when somebody does something wrong, just correcting them or trying to get them to learn the right way, and not, you worried about hurting their feelings or them going to, you know, the HR department to complain that someone was mean to them?
Well, no, I think you see a lot more of that now. I think you see a lot more of that now. What I do think is, you know, I think everyone should be professional towards each other. And that never changed. I think we have boundaries and that should never change. Even like your home life, you should have boundaries with your home life. As long as your work life is the same with the boundaries, that never changes. But you do see this different generations that's very sensitive. And to work at a hospital where we work and to be that sensitive, I couldn't work there with those patients. Those patients and the families, it's a lot.
Yeah, just for context for people listening, so Boston Medical Center, it's in South Boston, and it's the area that it's in. There's a lot of mental health issues, a lot of substance abuse. So a lot of our patients come in and have, psychosocial issues, and a lot of them can be combative and not always appropriate. So I think that's definitely something. You can't have a soft skin and work where we work. You're not going to last long if that's the case.
Yeah. And I think with anywhere, like even I was at Brigham's at the BI, and I was there, and my brother had a procedure, and my sister was so out of control, and I felt sorry for the nurse. And I'm like, don't talk to her like that, please. It's just like with families, like. It could go to any hospital. You could run into these difficult people. But if you are sensitive, that's a lot. Like, I do notice, and I'm going to refer to my daughter, my stepdaughter, this generation is a lot sensitive than we were.
Yeah, no, I'm a little bit younger than you are, but I'm a Gen Xer. So it's like, one of those things, like, you grew up, and if you had a problem, tough luck, deal with it. It wasn't like, I'm sorry. What can I do for you? It's no, if you have a problem, you have to figure it out. And if you can't figure it out, find help. And if you can't, then sorry. Like things have changed quite a bit. I don't know if it's for the better or not, but we are where we are, right? With your 36 years that you've had in the ICU, or working just in, medicine and in the ICU for a lot of that, do you have any specific patients or cases that kind of stick out in your mind as far as I don't know, maybe somebody who overcame an extraordinary illness to actually survive, or just an extraordinary case, or maybe you have more than one example that just kind of really stick out in your mind?
No, I think I just have so much with so many different people that nothing like, because it's been so many years being there. I remember this one patient during the AIDS epidemic. They was talking about being in a club and I'm like, wow. Knowing that you're handing a death sentence, you're smiling and you're laughing and, you're moving in the bed and we're talking and we're laughing together. I think because I had that experience at such a young age at the beginning of my career, I went through that pandemic and then COVID. And I think that put that perspective on, life is short, live it to the fullest. And then my first experience with death in my family was 2004. My brother died. So that was all of our first experience with death affected me to such a point that it took so long for me to recover from his death because my family is very close. So I think about that and I'm like, life is short. Even with all the families, but especially that at the beginning of my career to experience, going through AIDS and seeing this person so vibrant with life and nothing but a stick and knowing that this person is dying, that just started my career,
It's a lot. Do you think that these type of things over time, you become desensitized to them, or do you think you still have just a better way of coping with seeing all these things because you've seen so much?
I think I have a better way of coping. I mean, I still have my moments where I have like COVID took you back to that time. Which each death comes a memory of, this person. I remember being in the room after my father died and Chris Withen and I was in the room and, Dr. Withen and this patient had passed. And similar to my father, and I'm standing there crying, and she was like, Suzanne, step up. Yeah, that never changes. I think every day with life is coping, Like the younger generation, they may have a lot of anxiety, but I'm pretty sure you know, it's a generation, the younger generation. I look when they talk about anxiety because I don't know that experience, but I try to understand it. I'm not going to deny what anyone is going through, you know, because I come up in a tough generation, you know. My parents didn't have time to deal with fairness. What I say, there was too many of us, but I do understand because I empathize with people, I have a heart just like everybody else, but yeah.
I think that's, you know, part of being a nurse, and that's why you get into nursing, is there's a certain level of, you know, sympathy and empathy that you have for others. And you can definitely become jaded as a nurse the more years you work and the harder it gets. So I'm glad to see that hasn't, you know, obviously you're not, which is fantastic. But I've seen a lot of other nurses, and that's why sometimes they leave, you know, the ICU or other places, because they just can't deal with, you know, coming in every day and just not wanting to be around that type of environment. So right. I commend you for that.
Yeah. And I say to nurses, like, you know, like some of the younger nurses, I don't want to work at the bedside. You know what? It's okay if they say that. And they may not want to work at the bedside. That's not for everyone. I don't get offended when people say that. It doesn't bother me. I say to young people, find what makes you happy. That's what life is. Find what makes you happy. Because I love doing it doesn't mean you like doing it. You know? So in our nursing career, we have so many opportunities and so many different career fields that we can do. You just have to find your happy spot and that's going to benefit your patient. Because at the end of the day, it's that patient that's going to say to you, thank you. Or that family that's going to say, thank you. And that's going to make your day because you know you have done the best for that patient and for that family.
Kind of to talk about, like, you know, just the future of nursing too. So there's some projected data that there's going to be 60,000 nursing jobs that are going to be needed by 2030, which is what, 5 years from now, and that there's going to continue to be this nursing shortage into the future. So there's a lot of nursing programs, a lot of new RNs coming out. There's a lot of retiring RNs or moving on from, you know, the bedside to do clinic roles or go to the PACU or other places. Do you think it's going to be difficult to find nurses to fill the ICU jobs that we need? The other component to that, too, is just generationally, we're becoming an older society. So all the baby boomers are going to be retiring. You have all, you know, the longer we live, the more chronic illnesses we end up developing. And eventually those people are going to need hospital care. I guess the question I have is just what are your thoughts on possibly the looming nursing shortage? And do you think that we're going to have enough nurses to actually care for the amount of people that are going to need to be cared for?
I'm not sure. I don't know, like, are there a lot of nurses coming out of nursing school? We seem to be able to hire new grads in the ICU. And if you think about it, when I started nursing 37 years ago, right? So I was one of the younger nurses. And I remember there was only like two people my age. And there was two people my age for years. So there wasn't a lot of newer nurses. So those nurses that I started off with, they're going to retire in the next 2 to 3 years because I started off with a lot of older nurses that's still in the same job. So I can totally see the nursing shortage coming because they've been talking about this for years. And with the generation that's a couple years older than me, they, you know, people are retiring within the next 3 to 4 years. So I'm not sure how, you know, they should do better with recruitment with nurses, like go into those high schools. I mean, if I would have known that when I was in high school, I would have became a nurse, you know, sooner. But no one came into high schools and said, you know, this is what you can do. But you know what? The service people, they do a lot of our recruitment, heavy recruitment. They go into the schools, into the high schools. Well, we don't have that. Like, we don't have nurses going into the high school. Even the hospital should go into the high school and do career day just about nursing because there's so many different careers in nursing.
Do you think that, so I know when you first started out, as far as like nursing pay, like nurses seem to do much better now just getting paid than they used to. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you think is another reason why maybe you're seeing, you know, more younger nurses today than back when you were getting in? do you feel like the pay has been commensurate as well over the last 36 years? Or did it take a while? Yeah. Did it take a while for...
I think it took a while before we got like really good pay. It did take a while. I mean, you didn't get great pay, but also inflation wasn't like this. So there was a lot of things to consider too. Like housing wasn't like this. Before you could get a house in Boston for $150,000. Now the houses are like, you know, $500,000,
$800,000. So yeah, close to a million in some places. So it's crazy.
Right. Even you can get an apartment for $500 a month. I mean, living now, that's why so many people, the older kids start staying home. That's not kids, I say kids now because I'm older, but like the 20-year-olds and the 30-year-olds are still living with their parents. I can't imagine how people are living that young because the pay isn't, you know, pay should still be better than it is now, but that's just my opinion.
But it's better than it used to be, right? Because I remember even when I first started out, even it's just been, and I think unions have kind of helped a little bit with that with negotiation. But you can definitely do pretty well as a nurse these days. So I guess the last question I have for you. Do you ever watch any like medical TV shows or medical dramas or even medical comedies? And if you do, which one is your favorite?
What? Right now, I'm into The Pit.
I've heard that's decent.
Oh, my God. That's so good. And the guy that used to play on ER, he's like the big doctor now in The Pit. He's the attendant in the ED. Yeah, it's actually really good.
Is it realistic or is it? Yeah. That's one of the problems I've had, like watching shows in the past. Like I loved, like, did you ever watch House? I loved House, but it wasn't really realistic with the physicians would be running all the lab work and doing the MRIs. It was just, you know.
Right. Yeah, that wasn't realistic.
Well, Suzette, thank you so much for joining us for Nurses Week. Was there a nurse when you were a younger nurse? Was there a Nurses Week, or is this a newer creation? Because I can't really remember.
I don't remember that being a nurse this week at the beginning of nursing. I don't remember. Yeah. I'm trying to think. I think it started. It started after we moved into when it became Boston City, not Boston City, but Boston Medical Center. I do not remember a nurse this week when it was City Hospital. Yeah,
because even when I first started as a nursing assistant, I don't ever remember there being a nurses week. It doesn't seem like it was till like the maybe like early to mid like the 2010, 2007, 2010, right. Something like that. I don't know. Anyway, thank you so much for coming on and just sharing us, you know, with us about your life, your experience, your career. I really do appreciate it. Thank you everybody for listening. Thank you again to all our nurses out there. Happy Nurses Week. If anybody has any questions, comments, thoughts, or requests, we can be reached at makemesickpod@gmail.com. And we are at makemesickpod on X or Twitter. Thank you again, everybody. And please remember to wash your hands.
Rocking the ICU. Suzette got the wisdom and the hustle too. 36 years deep, she's seen it all, it's true. From the AIDS fight to COVID breaking through. Charge Nurse Suzette, she's a beacon of light. Spreading hope in the chaos, working day and night. Through the storm and the shadow, she's always in flight. Life's a battle, she's the warrior, shining so bright. Need a pro on the floor, she's calm in the scene. The patient's lifeline, the bedrock of the team. Her lap's infectious like a healthcare dream. Count on Suzette to bring us supreme. Charged Nurse Suzette, she's a beacon of light. Spreading hope in the chaos, working day and night. Through the storm and the shadow, she's always in flight. Oh, oh, oh. Life's a battle, she's the warrior shining so bright. She's calm in the scene, the patient's lifeline, the bedrock of the team. Her life's infectious like a healthcare dream. Count on Suzette to bring the supreme. Charge nurse Suzette, she's a beacon of light, spreading hope in the chaos, working day and night. Through the storm and the shadow, she's always in flight. Charge nurse Suzette, she's a beacon of light, spreading hope in the chaos, working day and night. Through the storm and the shadow, she's always in flight. Life's a battle, she's the warrior shining so bright. Oh, oh, oh. Need a pro on the floor, she's calm in the scene. The patient's lifeline, the bedrock of the team. Her life's infectious like a healthcare dream. Count on Suzette to bring the supreme. Charge nurse Suzette, she's a beacon of light, spreading hope in the chaos, working day and night. Through the storm and the shadow, she's always in flight. Oh, oh, oh. Life's a battle, she's the warrior shining so bright.